You are listening to episode 100 of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, Triple Digits.
Episode 100. That is 100. That is three digits. We have moved. Technically, there's as many digits as you need, but we have moved into decading the third digit, which is pretty exciting, of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast.
Woohoo!
Woo! Today is August the 25th, 2013. I am Matthew Dean Furlough. This is my brother, just my brother, James Furlough. And then we're going to keep going down the line. We've also got David Perry, one of the former co-hosts of the temporary co-hosts of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast, and Avneet, another former co-host of the Furlough Bros Tech Podcast. We're doing a big big little celebration thing here today, so we got some extra people coming in, and hopefully it will be good.
It will be different, for sure.
Yeah.
It will be good. So, I guess for starting it off, hopefully you guys know them, but it is 100, and so we've been doing something special. We've been thinking about it. We're like, what could we do? So, since we talk about tech companies and their business models all the time, we decided to actually create our own business model.
Oh, baby.
So we are officially launching, get this, the Furlough Bros store. Yes. So, If you head over to the website that is furloughbros.com, at the very top you'll see our names, and right sandwiched right in between strategically is the word store. Oh, yes. And clicking on that, you'll have an opportunity to check out all sorts of cool Furlough Bros products. And, yes, we've got a champagne-colored T-shirt, which we thought was appropriate. For an upcoming announcement. We got some actual like business casual type things. We got some tees for the ladies and some long sleeve shirts. Matthew, I made a beer mug for you.
I appreciate that. I almost bought it.
Whoa. So that's then, awesome.
Yeah, I think I need to get one of those.
Yeah, check it out, Ernie. This is important.
Yeah, so and they didn't copyright us or tell me to take down anything, which is good.
Yeah.
Slightly concerned. But, yeah, you could just get a straight up basic logo tee if you wanted, or, like I said, the more colorful ones, but that's just like painted on your chest. But,
yeah.
There it is. So, and here's the big news. To celebrate the 100, we're giving some stuff away.
Okay? Oh, baby.
What?
Yeah.
So here's what you
gotta
do. I
want in on the beer mug. I'm ready.
Here's what you gotta do. Okay. It's pretty simple, right? It's the classic sharing mechanism. Either retweet us on the Twitter, or reshare us on Google+, or share us on Facebook. And it could be either the main episode, it could be one of the weekly cuts, preferably episode 100, so that when others listen, they kind of figure out what's going on. But whatever. And if you do that, we'll be able to track you actually doing that. I'm pretty sure those are the three big ones that we do it on. If you just like it too, we might be, you know, we'll see. But yeah. Preferably the share. And we'll contact you to get your, you know, your shipping address, and we'll even let you pick which one you want.
Oh, good.
Oh, man.
I was in it to win it on the beer mug, so.
Yeah, so if that's what you wanted, we'd be happy to send that to you. We haven't decided on a limit yet, but it's definitely more than one, so you have a shot.
So. Yeah. Yeah.
At first I was like, let's do 100. And then I went, well, maybe not.
Yeah, but, yeah. That's,
so somewhere games. Between there. Somewhere more than one.
Dang.
Less than 100. But yeah, so that's how we're celebrating. And that'll always be there. And we'll try to remind you constantly from now on of our new revenue model.
Yeah, that's true.
And, but yeah, cool, pretty exciting. There it is.
So evolving soap opera of Furlough Bros podcast, man.
Hey, don't get too jumpy. Don't get too froggy, David. We're about to talk about the soap opera, okay? speaking of which, this week I think, like every week, we will be talking about technology and the continuing corporate opera, or the soap opera of corporations' dealings back and forth, the people working for them, their marketing campaigns, and the technology they're developing, and probably some stuff about doing this for like 100 weeks in a row, which is kind of nutty. It's almost 2 years.
That's a huge accomplishment, guys. That's super awesome.
Yeah, it is. And so before we get into the heart of the show, we do have to once again have a short disclosure. And this was the biggest hurdle to getting the entire thing started. It was the potential death knell of the podcast before it even got started. So I'll let James do that.
Yeah, I did have to ask permission to do this podcast from my employer, who just so happens to be HP. But in order for me to do it, I had to let you know that I do not represent HP or any of HP's opinions.
Nice.
As long as I do that, I can say whatever I want.
So, exactly. If this is the first time you're listening to the show, hopefully it is the first time you're listening to the show, come back next week as well, because next week will probably, if you don't like this, don't blame James and I, blame Avni and David.
You can blame me. Fault, yeah, blame me. Yeah, take it.
But this week we do want to give a short introduction to the four of us so that you know, who we are and why we're here. James and I are both we're technophiles. We like technology. We like corporations. We like this kind of stuff. We found that we were having like hours long discussions about once a week on the phone for like a year before we decided to start recording it and broadcasting it. So this is just something we're really passionate about. I'm an engineer. I work in the semiconductor industry. I build tools for and equipment for semiconductor stuff, and I'm an engineer. That's kind of my background. James
works for HP still, but on the business side, the marketing, doing statistical analyses and things. I actually wanted to share this because this is kind of cool. This isn't my job, but I often can't share what it is that I do because, you know, of that nature. But I was recently for a consulting gig, I made this map here.
Whoa.
And it just kind of shows the kind of data analysis, kind of the stuff that we'll do. So what the different colors on this map shows different sales prices in the Corvallis, Albany, Lebanon, Philomath areas.
Nice.
So that you can kind of compare and see the different price. So, you know, it's yellow and green are cheap. Blue and purple are, you know, in the medium range. Red and brown are expensive houses. And so you can see that Corvallis is clearly more expensive than Albany and Lebanon, which is why a lot of people like myself flock to a different place. But it's just things like this, analyzing data in such a way where it takes it from a big database spreadsheet, kind of hard to understand, to something that is hopefully a little bit more intelligible and tells a story and lets you get lost in it.
Nice.
So that's what I do. And
cool.
Part of the reason why, you know, I deserve to talk about tech.
Is there a train track that runs directly through that? Because that seems a little bit. you should highlight the train tracks on that map. Is all I'm saying. I want to know. So David, why are you here?
I don't know why I'm here. I think I've been like shanghaied into this.
That's right.
I am also a technophile. That makes it sound dirty, but yeah, awesomely dirty at the same time. So I like getting all the new tech and messing with it and playing with it and breathing it. And I also work at Hewlett-Packard. I don't really feel like I need to give the same disclaimer, but sure. If I say something about HP, it's my own thing, I guess. Live the dream. I work on future product marketing. And,
oh, baby. So you're going to tell us all the secrets, yeah?
I bring all the new and cool to HP.
So are you going to tell us any secrets today?
Any secrets on what?
Like future products?
We will probably make a new printer in the future.
Oh, geez.
And I would be willing to bet that we come out with a tablet and a laptop in the future.
Mm.
Prediction time.
Old words.
There it is.
And then, and last but certainly not least, Avneet.
Hi. I'm just a software developer at a company called MyVest. Make wealth management software, but like not really in the product side or anything, but I've always just been interested in computers and tech. So Cool. That's why I'm here. But
yeah, they're yeah, cool. And yeah, the reason why, just so everybody kind of knows, the reason why we invited these two guys back is because we really enjoyed the conversations we've had with them over the course of the podcast, and we just wanted to, yeah, like I said earlier, we want to make a big deal about this. So without any further ado, you want to
There was some news on Friday. We'll start backwards here. A guy, speaking of computers, Avneet, made an announcement who is, you know, he's pretty integral, I guess, to the computer industry. If you're hiding under a rock, you probably didn't hear it. But Microsoft CEO Steve Ballmer has finally, I think after a little too long, has decided that he will retire sometime within the next 12 months. Leave it to classic Microsoft to, like, to give out vaporware.
I was going to say vaporware.
I will retire. It's just, it's coming. Just wait for it.
Yeah.
But yeah, pretty big news. I mean, because A, Microsoft is huge, and at least formally, the big impact on the tech community. It still is, right? I mean, most people are still using Windows. They may hate it, but they use it.
See, now this is what I'm looking forward to this, because I happen to know Avneet's opinion of.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and I don't. I feel like I'm usually trying to be the middle grounder on a lot of this stuff, fair and balanced.
What? I thought that was my role.
No. Yeah. It depends. So I guess for starters. I don't know. Everybody's reactions. What are your thoughts on this?
It's about time, in all honesty.
Yeah. Why do you say that?
It's I personally do enjoy using Windows. I mean, that pretty much stems from me playing games like all my life, so I've been kind of truthfully like shoehorned into the operating system a little bit. Mm-hmm. But I think that given the alternatives for what I want to do in a given day, Windows is great for what I want. That said, for the last few years, Windows has not been looking so hot in comparison to just Apple products, but also just like Unix for your desktop, like Unix operating systems have become more popular for good reason. You know, Vista was a huge disaster, and I think Ballmer said like his biggest regret was like the whole development like mess that was the transition from Longhorn to Vista, right? That was just a mess. He's taken a huge hit on this Surface thing, which I think the Surface tablets and like the whole Windows 8 transition, the transition from Windows 7 to 8 was really cool. Still is really cool. I think that it's shown that where technology is going in terms of like mobile computing. When I heard the announcement for Surface, I was like, oh man, laptops are done in like 2 or 3 years. No more laptops, no need for them. So I was like, oh, this is great, but my opinion is not the one that matters. It's just the masses, and Microsoft's taking a beating in terms of like public reputation with this like huge Windows 8 shift. No one likes the UI or anything, and every day I hear more people talking trash on Microsoft. I'm like, well, this is not good for a CEO. So.
Yeah, no.
So I saw this coming for a while.
Yeah. Oh, I think everybody feels like they saw it coming for a while, for like the last 7 years. Yeah. And pretty much since Vista. I mean, it was sort of a, save it. And I don't know. What do you think, David?
I don't know. There's some good things about Steve Ballmer and some bad things. I think that Apple really changed the technology landscape to have a devices and services bent that Apple and Google have both ushered in. And so other companies have struggled to change in that process. So, for example, Hewlett-Packard struggled on the hardware side to develop integrated software solutions to match the hardware, same as Microsoft trying to build hardware to match their software. And I think Windows 8 was really bold in that they were trying to change what it meant to have a laptop, but there's so much legacy hardware out there that like the Surface we were just talking about, is really cool. Windows 8's really cool if you have touch. It's really terrible if you have a mouse and keyboard.
I really haven't seen any difference with the mouse and keyboard, but then again, I'm kind of, again, like a bit of a fanboy, so.
Well, I mean, it's good, but it's intended for touch.
Oh, yeah. Oh, for sure. No,
it's designed from the ground up for touch.
Oh, yeah. My mom got a Windows 8 laptop, and she adores it. It's got a touchscreen, and she absolutely adores it. And then you look at me. I don't even use the start menu on my Windows 7 stuff at work. I just, if I ever want anything, I hit the Windows key and just start typing away and searching it. So, like, for me, the Metro, like, UI made absolutely no difference. That said, I'm judging Windows 8 by completely ignoring one of clearly its biggest flaws, which was it was designed around touch, and I'm just kind of ignoring all the touch features, which is...
Oh, that's one way to do it.
So I do have an interesting article that I want to bring up at this point. Seems perfect timing. This article is called... Turns out nobody wants to touch Windows 8, and Microsoft is screwed. The numbers are in on the touchscreen laptop sales, and they don't look good. In May of this year, a report from Display Bank, a division of market research company IHS, said that only 10% of laptops shipped worldwide during the first 3 months of 2013 had a touchscreen. This tidbit was reported as good news. Forecast for touchscreen sales have dropped from up to 18% of all notebooks to between 10 and 15% of the market. Poor sales, big trouble for Microsoft, the company banked on. The numbers, and then skeptics might look at the figures and say, so what? Well, some success stories do take over a market overnight. Most grow at a slow but steady rate. If touchscreens have 10% of the market, blah, blah, blah.
I don't know.
Basically, what this article is saying is, sum it up really quick, is that the numbers are bad for touchscreens. They're a lot worse than everybody thought that they thought it was going to be. And I actually said, like, when I first played with Windows 8 at the Microsoft store, I thought it was kind of cool having a touchscreen laptop because you could touch the screen on a laptop, and and I thought it was a useful interface to be playing with, outside of the tablet market. But it's nobody wants it. Nobody's buying it. Nobody's going for it, which is not good news.
I think there's multiple problems. I think that Microsoft and HP or hardware, Dell, Acer have a hard problem with making a compelling value proposition on a convertible laptop that's a touchscreen versus a tablet. A tablet has a very defined use case that is, I'm going to sit on the couch, I'm going to have a lean back experience and use my touchscreen, versus a convertible laptop is trying to be both and not succeeding at either. It's trying to be a lean back and a lean in experience, and it's not really succeeding. And so they need to do a better job of, in the marketing, talking about, the person that's maybe using the laptop for work during the day and gaming and watching Netflix at night.
Are you trying to suggest that they should do more than have people dancing and snapping lids onto their computer for their marketing campaign?
For all the colors.
Maybe, yeah. Well, and then I think the other thing is touch devices work really well when the software is made for touch. Yeah. And so using Microsoft Excel as a touchscreen is not a good idea. It's not built for touch. You don't want to do Excel touch. And so that's part of the struggling to find that value proposition, right, is like there's some tasks that you want to do more, tactily with a keyboard and mouse, and there's other ones that you kind of just want to do your finger and
right.
So I think that they need to be able to define that user that has a need for both. I need to use this laptop during the day to get my crap done, and then I need to use this laptop in the night to get my game on.
Yeah, that makes sense. Steve Ballmer won't get a chance to do that, but
I do think Steve Ballmer, though, I mean, there's been a pretty – it might you might say it's late. You might say they're lagging behind Apple and Google. But he made a pretty big-ass aircraft carrier boat change.
We're not getting the clean designation this week.
Yeah, oh. you ran that risk with me. So,
sorry, go ahead.
So we're turning that aircraft carrier – they've made a lot of moves that way into like Surface and the Surface Table and Xbox and Skype and, you know,
one of the things that's always, well, I actually read a really good article about Skype this week. This was great. Was there all these, like, what the heck is wrong with Microsoft articles leading up to the big announcement on Friday? And one of the big ones is it's like, why isn't Skype integrated automatically into Windows Phone 8? Why don't they have it? Why isn't it
why
text messaging app? Nobody really knows. They think it was not monopolies, but antitrust concerns. You know, anytime they bundle anything, they get in trouble. But it's like they're not a monopoly in the phone market, not even close. I mean, it's laughable. And everybody else does it. Apple has iMessages. Google has Google Talk, and they're all like standard and integrated, and it's you know, Skype's one of their best value propositions, and it's not tied into Windows 8 or Windows Phone.
Well, they just integrated into Outlook this last week, so maybe it's just starting, you know, and you gotta baby step it.
I think corporations have a hard time integrating services across their corporation. Not many companies can do that. For example, like Sony. Well, I could point to HP, but I'd rather not. But for example, like Sony. Sony had a real hard time pulling together their consumer electronics division with their entertainment division, with their music division, with, you know, none of these things talk to each other. So the fact that they had Sony phones and then they tried to put the PlayStation stuff in the Xperia phones and it worked like crap, and then, you know, trying to integrate like their music store into the PlayStation, they just is very dispersed, and conflicting and diverging interests cause, you know, in the corporate soap opera, problems to get this stuff to integrate it. And you need a leader at the top that's just like, you know, and I'm trying to stay away from the cliche, so let's use Amazon for example.
Nice.
Amazon is like, we're going to use Amazon Cloud, we're going to use Amazon servers, we're going to use Amazon for the site, we're going to use the Kindle that uses the bookstore, that uses the Audible.com connection. Everything they've built, they're using integrated into their
offering. I was going to say, because I think, you know, and I'm glad you bring up Amazon, because oftentimes Apple gets put on a hill as the singular example of
that's what I was trying to
vertical
avoid.
Integration. But there are really good examples of other tech companies that have those kind of cross-service integration where they do a good job of bringing all these different technologies. And Google themselves have it. You know, they're so scatterbrained that sometimes it seems like they don't do that. But really, when they get a technology that works, they put it in everything, and it's very unified. And so I guess the question becomes for me, why is it that Sony and Microsoft are so terrible at that, whereas Google and Apple and Amazon tend to be able to integrate good products across the different platforms so that they really do get where they need to be when they need to be there?
I think it comes to that, like, strong visionary leader.
Oh, so you're saying that's why they're firing Ballmer. Oh, they're not
maybe.
Firing him. They're not firing him.
Excuse me, he's stepping down.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, I think Gates did a good job of that, right? Gates was an OG on vision, right? Like, that guy had vision out the yin-yang to try to avoid some more swear words. That guy had all sorts of vision, right? But then he couldn't necessarily operationally execute all the time. And so,
I think compared to Ballmer, Gates is Gates built one of the biggest companies that's ever existed.
Yeah.
He's pretty unimpeachable when it comes to, that this conversation. I wonder
that's
how
the
much.
Other pro- I think the other problem that Microsoft has is when you have a founder that's still alive, that's not at the helm, that's tricky business, right? Because everybody's going to be like, why, what would Bill Gates be doing, and why are you not doing what, you know?
Yeah, like it's any better like when you have a dead CEO. I mean, at least Gates can sit around and say, no, he's doing a good job, don't worry about it, whereas Tim Cook has to just the looming ghost of Steve Jobs constantly breathing
down his neck. But I think that is a little bit freeing in some cases because you don't know what Steve Jobs would say. I mean, press could speculate out the crazy.
Man,
people speculate out the crazy about, like, what would Bill and Dave do if Hewlett-Packard, you know? And those guys have probably rolled around in their grave 5 or 6 times, you know, since they passed away. But I think it's hard if you've got a CEO that's not the CEO and he was the big visionary.
Yeah.
I actually wouldn't be terribly shocked. Here's a prognostication.
Yes, predictions. Bring them on.
At some point, I think Bill Gates will take back over.
Really?
No way.
Before he dies.
What do you – wait, Avni, you seem shocked by that.
I don't think – I don't know. I really don't know what to say about it. I don't think it'll happen.
I mean, only if it's a situation like Dell, right, where the company is going down in flames and you're like, I got to step in and save it. You know, or who was the guy with Yahoo? I can't remember his name right now. You know, where he stepped
Jerry
in for like, yeah, where he stepped in for like 6 months to attempt to save the company. You know, but
Bill and Dave came back. Howard Schultz came back to Starbucks. I think there's a long track record of the visionary leader starting CEO coming back.
I think Bill Gates really
something else to do.
I'm gonna say I think Bill Gates really likes trying to save the world. I have a feeling it's kind of like you'd never see Elon Musk come back to eBay because he's got such a bigger to him going to space and you know pioneering the future of transportation for humanity is such a
and
bigger
for Matthew
calling.
Personally.
Yeah, I know. I love it. You know, it's such a bigger calling than eBay that it's I think it'd be laughable the idea that he'd ever go back to eBay, and he's having success. I get the similar vibe with Gates, where it's like unless all his money evaporates because the you know like you said the company completely collapses, and then he can't finance, you know, curing malaria and AIDS and you know making food rain from the sky and whatnot.
I don't think he'll be back in this as the next CEO.
No.
To clarify, right. He's not coming. But I bet you before he passes away, he'll come back at some point. Might be 10 years from now, might be 15 years from now, might be 20 years from now.
So this is a little bit, I have a difficult time guessing on this one, but who do you think the next CEO will be?
I don't know.
Who do you think it should be? I mean, like, what kind of a person would you be looking for?
Well, the one guy I thought it would be ended up quitting, Steven Sinkovsky. And they've been in a ton of turmoil and, you know, a bunch of people moving around since then.
Well, I think the tea leaves were apparent internal to the corporation months earlier. So that's why that Steven guy left. That's why Don Matrick left, who was the CEO of entertainment or GM of entertainment devices and went to CEO of Zynga. You know, I think there's
that was a good
people reading the tea leaves are just jetting. I don't know. I think I can't really think of any name, but it'd be kind of interesting if they hired kind of a Marissa Mayer like type, like a younger person out of Facebook or out of Google.
Sheryl Sandberg, come on over. I can see that.
I actually saw an article that somebody said Kevin Rose, which I was like, what?
Never.
Yeah.
That'd be funny.
I don't think he has the business chops to do it. So.
No offense, but what of his businesses have succeeded?
Exactly. I don't think he has the business jobs. He's a good entrepreneur, but...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Well, I actually would be really surprised that Microsoft of all companies would do that. They're just such a, I mean, that would be such a radical cultural shift for them to go from, you know, stuffy old white men leading the company to, a young visionary leading Microsoft. I don't know if they could survive that sort of I can't possibly imagine the investors and the board of directors approving something like that.
They need to lean hard into devices and services. So they need to lean hard into like Surface and Windows 8 and Xbox and Skype and Bing and all that stuff. And
well, I agree, but I think what they're going to do is they're going to, I guess what my point is, I think that part of the problem is that they didn't make Steve Ballmer quit 2-3 years ago. They kept giving him a chance because that's the culture of the BOD. That's the culture of the investors. They just have this. They have a mentality that Ballmer was the visionary for the company, and you're like, he's not a visionary though. That's just like,
no, he never was a visionary.
But that's what they wanted. They wanted somebody who would take a ship and just kind of keep it going down the path. And I think even though they understand that they need a visionary, they need somebody who can see what's going to happen before it happens, the idea of them actually hiring somebody who can, you know, I think what they want is they want a visionary light. They want somebody who
visionary
can
light.
Really see what Apple's going to be doing and what HP's going to be doing and what Google's going to be doing in the next year. What they really need is they need somebody who says what we should be doing in the next 10 years. And I think James and I have talked about this before that a lot of the differences between these different companies' success stories has been, their ability to sell their vision of the future, of vision of what technology should be. You know, that's what Steve Jobs was great at. Was selling his vision. It's not the only vision. It's not necessarily the best vision. He was just the best at selling his as the best. I have a feeling that what they need is somebody with a vision, and what they're going to get is somebody who just sees everybody else's and tries to be a competitor, you know?
I saw a rumor that they're Reed Hastings from Netflix was in the mix, which I think is kind of interesting. I don't know if he would be a big tech guy, but he's definitely visionary.
I could see them go with a non-tech person, which I think would just be a terrible mistake. You know, I could see them go with somebody who you know, a John Sculley type event, you know.
You know, I actually think the point of, like, what makes these companies successful is who could project their vision the best. I think that's a really good point, and I think one of the big problems Microsoft has had, at least that I've had with them recently, is that they don't have a short-term enough vision. I feel like they're like, I think a couple of years ago they released a video of what they expect the future to look like, and as you know, like basically like everything was a Surface. Like there's holograms of like menus and like, oh man, I got to drop my kid off at work at school while I go to work, and I'll, you know, let me pull like this Minority Report type interface up. It's one of those weird like future preview videos, and I'm like, oh man, that's cool, and I can see how like the technology they're putting out could lead up to that. But then like just simple stuff like, oh, we're releasing Windows Phone, and you're gonna have this feature and this feature and this feature, and then that doesn't come out until like a year after Windows Phone 7 is released or something like that. Like those, I'm all good with having like with your company and your product, like having a good vision for your product. But what I found is the vision that, or like the image that Apple products have, for example, they're so well grounded that like you know exactly what you're getting and you want it. Whereas all I've seen from Microsoft is, I promise I'm going to do this for you, and then it just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
I sit here sad, and then I just go download Ubuntu or something.
Yeah. No, that's a great point. That has been a big shortcoming for them, is that they do most of their super exciting stuff never comes to fruition, and you're just like, what the heck, guys? And like, it's not like Apple's not guilty of that ever, but or Google is not guilty of that, but they that happens far less frequently than and where Microsoft will actually announce a product that never actually goes into fruition. You're like,
you actually see progress too with Google. I mean, like, I'm not going to have Google Glass for like years, but I still see
years,
like, one or two
like,
people.
As soon as you can buy it?
Yes. Like, I still see like progress around here. I still see like videos popping up of what this is like. I still see like the hype machine's still going, but it just seems like it's more in reach where I don't really have that faith for Microsoft products.
Right. That's that. And you know what? That's a great point. Yeah. You know. Yeah. I don't know. I yeah. So it's crazy. Just drives me nuts because and this goes back. What makes this so painful, every time we talk about this, what makes this so painful is the fact that they're so close. They're so close to being like, there's so many little things that they do that you're like, it seems like you're on the right track. You just missed it. You just missed it. And because you missed it by a little, you missed it completely. You know, and it just drives me crazy. You know, I still don't understand why they don't have, like, really great cross-platform integration of apps. And it's like everything can be built in .NET. You build one app, it'll run on any one of their platforms. And nobody knows that. That's like a shock to people. People that, like, love technology and own Windows 8 and own Windows phones, and they're like, what? What do you mean you could do that? Like, yeah, that's what's great about these, you know, these different platforms and you know, and you, I don't understand how you can't get developers to want to develop for these different platforms. Well, again, because they get, well, you don't have enough, you know, people. And you sit there and you go, you got all of Windows 8, you've got all of Windows Phone, which is actually a gigantic market. If you could build one app that was useful as a, like a, you know, cross, you know, it's like an Instagram app. You build one app and it works on everything. You know, that's a kind of a cool proposition, and if you built it exclusively for you know, Windows, but like nobody knows you can do that. I don't know.
That was being bragged about since like before Windows Phone 7 came out. That was one of the reasons I got Windows Phone 7 was because I heard about they were trying to do that, and it just never.
Like the platform is there. It just nobody develops like that because Microsoft hasn't shown them how to do it. You know, it's the. What sold the Wii? It wasn't the motion controllers. It was the game, the Wii Sports.
Wii Sports.
You know, because it showed everybody what the Wii was supposed to be like. It showed developers. It showed users. And Microsoft never shows anybody. And when they do, it's like when they when Kinect came out. You know, and it was like, I was so excited because there's so many cool things you can do with that. And what did they do? They launched games where you like put your hands out and block balls. And they're like, their tech demos are terrible, terrible. They're not fun at all. And it's like,
I just love how you're like Wii Sports, like the most amazing thing ever. And then blocking balls.
The Kinect was capable of so much. Well, I don't know.
Kinect is a fantastic piece of hardware.
Exactly. That's my point. It's way more impressive than the Wiimote, really and truly. And they just don't do anything to really demonstrate to. You know, and it's not about the users. That's the thing, is that users, we'll just buy whatever's presented in front of us. We're stupid like that. You got to tell developers, though. Developers don't know either. There's an assumption within
Microsoft. He's about ready to go into the Balmer thing right now. Matthew Furlow's going to be like, developer.
It's true. But, I mean, like, the thing is that, like, there is this assumption within Microsoft, and there always has been, that developers have a vision, and they oftentimes don't. They, you know, they, Microsoft keeps giving them these canvases. You know, Apple, one of the reasons they were so great at selling their vision of the future is because they'd give you a canvas, they'd give you a new product, and then they tell you what to do with it. And they do it with their advertising, they do it with their apps, and everything was modeled after that. And where Apple's terrible is when somebody else comes up with a better idea, they're terrible at, like, going, hey, we should go and follow them, like how the Facebook app does. Well, a lot of your social network apps do, like, they'll do the all putting all the utilities behind all your settings behind the main pane, you know. And like Apple's taking forever to get on board with that piece of UI, which is brilliant. But so much of every app is is the way it is because Apple showed them how to do it. And Microsoft never does any of that stuff. They just make these like really cool products, these really cool platforms, and then they never show anybody what to do. They just assume developers will figure out what to do with it, which makes me wonder if they don't know. If they make these cool things saying, man, I'll bet this would be fun if somebody could play with it. And I don't know.
Dota is not that hard to work with. It's actually pretty nice. Like it's C# is very similar to Java, which means like the development. I feel like the development process. So I started making my like little indie game for the Xbox using their little XNA toolkit, and it was really not my favorite like library to work with, but it was pretty straightforward getting things working and on your Xbox and playing. And like it's I feel like from a developer perspective, I do a really poor job of doing side projects. I tend to like go to work and then come home and relax. But from what I can tell with my talking to friends, you develop for iPhone if you want a lot of people to use your app. You develop for Android if you want to mess around and like have things that like you feel power users might be into and stuff like that. But there's no real niche for like .NET. Apps, right. App developers. Like no one really wants. There's no reason. Like there's no reason for them to want to develop for it. Like, yeah. Why do Windows Phone when you could do Android, which is way more open?
So Avneet, you glossed over something there, and I want to kind of wrap back to it. So what game did you make?
Oh, I had like it was going to be a 2D fighting game. I was doing it for a senior project at school. I didn't really finish it. I have another right. game out on the market when I was on when I worked for a Japanese company called Arc System Works for the Nintendo DSi.
Wow. Cool.
Yeah. See.
Man, no, but I do disagree with you. Like you brought up a while ago with you brought up the Nintendo example, and I was like, oh man, Nintendo does a terrible job of like dealing with their developers.
I believe
until recently,
it.
Until recently. Recently, like, they've done a really good job of, like making their new console, the Wii U, like, really, really indie-friendly. But, man, I remember, like, the Wii Motion Plus didn't get released, like, until, what was it, like, a year after the console was out? I don't even remember.
Oh, yeah.
Like, it should have been on launch. And then, like, no third-party games out for it, like, that could utilize it because just Nintendo just didn't give a shit about the developers. I mean, well, I cuss too, so.
Yeah! Take that, James!
That's all right.
I agree with you, Avneet, and I'm not saying that Apple's not Apple. Nintendo's not great at I recognize that completely. They're not great at working with developers. They're good at showing.
Oh yeah,
and coming up with games that take advantage of what they want, so that developers know, hey, this would be a fun game. And I think part of the reason why nobody went with the Wii Motion Plus thing is because there weren't really any games that Nintendo came out with where it really felt like this is more than a gimmick. This really is this is more than just a small incremental improvement over what I already had. This is huge. This totally changes how I play these games. I don't feel like that really existed. And having played the games that Nintendo came out with, and so I think part of the reason why developers didn't want to play with it is because they didn't see they weren't shown, hey, this is cool, and they weren't inspired to come up with something great, you know, because Nintendo didn't inspire them. And whereas Google and Apple, and, you know, especially within the app department, they're both inspiring developers to come up with better stuff all the time, you know, and I don't know, which I think goes back to, you know, the reason why you're going to get your Steve Ballmer's to step down is because I don't think he inspires anybody. I don't get the feeling that anybody outside of a small group of people are really inspired by his vision of technology. And
I don't think, you know, not like you said a couple minutes ago, I don't think he has a vision of technology.
Yeah, exactly.
Probably a big part of the problem.
And what's tough for Ballmer is that I think he's a brilliant businessman. He's a brilliant, you know, he gets organization, he gets working with people, he gets, you know, he's had his fumbles along the way, you know, and it's like the ranking system for employees where they pitted everybody against each other and some have to be failures and it just was toxic. Like, that was a bad idea. But I think on a whole, he's...
I'm glad HP never does that.
I know, geez. All right, was that a... Did they not do that? that sounded sarcastic.
I'm just going to let that one float out there.
Okay, thank you.
HP has a similar system. That's
okay.
All.
And I think it's one of those things where it's I get the feeling with Microsoft that, or with Ballmer, that he has a lot of really great selling points as a CEO, but he, you know, what am I trying to say? But he.